You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, it is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 3rd of December 2024. The Australian share market hitting another record today, briefly breaching 8,500 points on the S&P ASX 200. We'll have the details with Scott Phillips from The Motley Fool in a few moments. But first, to the road achieving gender equality in Australia. It's getting longer, with women disproportionately impacted by economic pressures. And that's according to the latest Women's Index by Financy, which fell for a second consecutive quarter to a reading of 77.2. 100 represents gender parity. What does it all mean, and how can it be improved? Raina Bosch spoke with Bianca Hartsch-Hazelman, Financy CEO.
It's been a disappointing quarter for the Financy Women's Index, with progress going backwards for the second time this year, so two consecutive quarters. Not a great start for 2024, and it puts us on track to seeing yet another year of setbacks, which we saw in 2023. So why is this happening? Cost of living pressures, without a doubt. We've got a weaker economic environment, and what we're seeing is a disproportionate impact on women in terms of monthly hours worked relative to men. So we know the growth rate there is so much better for men than it is for women. Now, one of the reasons why we tend to see this is we know that when GDP growth and conditions are doing well, we tend to see monthly hours worked pick up increasingly. Business conditions are doing better, but men tend to do that much better than women. Conversely, when things are not doing as well as we're in the midst of at the moment, we've seen sharper falls for women than we are for men, or less growth, as we've seen in the September quarter. Women just aren't getting the opportunities in terms of that the work available, the hours that suit them. And we know this tends to come back to a lack of available flexible work conditions around all the other stuff that women in the Australian labour market tend to put on themselves, with around parenting, around caring for older parents and things like that, or other people in their family. So there's a lot of things that aren't really working and haven't been working for a really long time structurally for women in the workplace. And the answer, in my opinion, is to see a greater investment in workplace flexibility from employers, incentivized by government somehow, to really remove the gender flag from workplace flexibility so it's available more equally for men and for women. We take the stigma out of it, and we really start to invest more in seeing women in more full-time work roles that will really help to propel financial outcomes for women in particular.
You note as well the time that's needed to reach gender parity across a number of different categories. What's most concerning to you?
The most concerning timeframe to gender equality in this country to me is unpaid work, and that's standing at about 45 years. And the reason this is so concerning is what happens in the home largely dictates what we have time to do outside of the home in terms of participating in paid work. So these are stereotypes that slowly and gradually are being broken down in terms of who does the washing, who does the care responsibilities, who's doing all these things, and who has time left over to participate in paid work. And we tend to see, and we have for so many generations, seen that women are predominantly still doing that caring responsibility, and many of us want to, but we also want to participate in the paid work environment, but we need greater flexibility in order for that to happen. So if we look at unpaid work, we need to see greater balance there in our home lives in order to facilitate a greater amount of participation in paid employment, and also reciprocal from the employers giving us greater flexibility to participate. It is concerning that we're seeing more corporates start to tighten the reins when it comes to hybrid flexible work options, where we're being pressured more to get back to the office, to a traditional type of work environment. I really don't think that's the way to go. We need to see greater investment in a hybrid model where we have greater flexibility for men and women in the workplace, and less of this focus on getting back to the office 4 days a week. Really, we've moved on from that. We're on a Zoom call right now. We need to look at each role and see what flexibility and the types of flexible work that can be available. It need not be at home. It might be compressed work weeks. It might be different hours. So thinking differently from companies in order to be more competitive in the Australian environment is really important as well.
That's Bianca Hutch-Hazelman there from Financy.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
Another day, another record for the Australian share market. The S&P ASX 200 up by 0.56%, 8,495. For more, I spoke with Scott Phillips, the Chief Investment Officer at the Motley Fool. Yes. Scott, the ASX at a record today. What's driving it?
Ricardo, g'day. Yeah, it's doing incredibly well. Combination of local and international optimism, I think, is kind of the story. I think I've said to you before, mate, I'm always happier being the optimist in a room of pessimists. When at record highs, I'm always a little bit concerned about what might come down the pike. There is a lot of expectation in the US, of course, about a Donald Trump presidency and what it might mean for corporate America. Australia's shaking off any concerns about the tariffs. I hope those two hopes actually come true.
As we approach the end of the year, we typically see what some people call a Santa rally each year, right? What's stopping the market from continuing to rise?
I mean, nothing. There's no reason why I can't keep going, of course. I mean, the other thing, by the way, Santa rally originally came on the back of what was called the January effect. So people bought in December to get ahead of the January effect. Last couple of years, we've actually seen a rise in November, which is kind of where we've been, to try to front run the Santa Claus rally. Eventually will be the October effect and around it'll go. So maybe the weight of the market itself might be the answer, mate. If people have already done their buying, trying to get ahead of the Santa Claus rally, that might mean there's a bit of disappointment to come. But look, here's the thing, you know, for all of the challenges that we're having individually, interest rates and inflation, corporate Australia is still pretty healthy. And as I said, a lot of optimism out there. So I don't do predictions, as you well know, but there's no reason why the market can't go higher. In fact, over time it does. It sets new highs more often than not. Just remember, it can be a volatile ride.
Woolworths today says a 12-day supply chain industrial action hitting some supermarket shelves has cost the company $50 million so far. It says it'll get worse the longer the industrial action goes. In the scheme of things, though, what does it mean for the company? Because shares are still up today.
It feels a bit like Qantas, doesn't it? Where kind of the more bad headlines you get, the worse things are, and maybe the more desperate management gets. Of course, we've had the price gouging inquiry, the ACCC is looking into the supermarkets. So Woolies already on the nose a little bit with consumers. Then when you go and get your Christmas goodies and you can't find them on the shelves because of the strike, maybe Woolies feels the heat rather than the strikers. That's certainly what the unions are hoping, of course. They're trying to bring Woolworths back to the table at a really important time of the year. But you're right, $50 million in the context of the total sales across the whole year is really a drop in the ocean. This will come down, I think, to the brand damage, if any, that Woolworths perceives will happen. That, rather than the dollars, is what will bring them back to the negotiating table.
We've spoken about this before, the way supermarkets advertise their pricing. It's being investigated as well. Do we have any more insights in terms of the way that they are advertising these promotional prices?
Yeah, so Woolies gave an example of Oreos, and this is where I think the regulator is going to have to make a call, or the government, or the parliament anyway, going to have to make a call about what a reasonable time on promotion or at a new higher price is. But Woolies have said, look, the price was cheaper. Then Mondelez, the owner of Oreos, came to the company and said, we need to put a price increase through, so Woolies put the shelf price up 50 cents. Mondelez then came back to them after 3 weeks and said, we'd like to promote this product, please, and drop the price. Now, there is a perception that Woolies is putting up the price and discounting it back to try and create these artificial discounts. That's certainly what the ACCC is looking at. They're saying, hey, look, it wasn't us. It was the supplier who wanted the price increase. We simply passed on the increase and then passed on some promotional funding after the fact. Now, the question really is, if that's legitimate, is that enough time? Or do we have to have longer at the higher price before you can claim a genuine discount? But Woolies putting a stake in the sand saying, don't look at us. The suppliers did it. And we just simply passed on those prices.
Okay. Any other company news you've seen today?
There's a bit around, but really the big stuff is going to come down to the aftermath of the Black Friday sales. We're seeing some numbers around what we might have spent up to $7 billion after Black Friday through Cyber Monday, on top of another $6.7 billion or so in the month leading up to that. Really, the retail story is going to remain the big one. What does it do to retail sales? What does it do to companies individually and the economy more broadly, particularly as the RBA prepares to meet?
And finally, as we you know, enter a new year. We're also talking about the potential for interest rate cuts to come a lot later than what we think. A lot of the big four economists are pushing back their expectations from February to May now. Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
I hate the phrase a stock picker's market, Ricardo, but I'm going to use it anyway, because when the market's already at all-time highs, as you say, or there or thereabouts, there's not a lot of obvious value across the market itself. Again, not saying shares can't go up, but it's easier to find up bargains normally when things are cheaper. That makes obvious sense, right? Look for individual businesses that maybe are being knocked down. I'm kind of looking at contrarian plays right now. What's been left behind? A couple of retail exposed stocks. Eagers is one, the car dealer. They're about 11 times earnings, right? So that is those sort of businesses where the market is high, but some of those businesses have been left behind. That's where I'd go looking. I don't know about Eagers. That's an option. I don't want to give anyone a recommendation that will necessarily you go well or badly, but those sorts of companies that have been left behind, that's what I've been looking recently.
That's Scott Phillips there from the Motley Fool.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.